Aurora. As the helicopter faded, she crossed the hall to her old office. It was locked, but her old key worked. She said, "Lights." Nothing had changed. Neither of them possible, but she had straightened up for the expected interview. A layer of dust. Would she ever work here again? She'd know in a few days. Her shelves of old books seemed untouched. On impulse, she took the latest acquisition, the volume of century-old photographs from Life magazine, turned off the lights, and locked the door behind her. It was about a mile down to Creekside. She was tired, but she didn't dare use a cab. Most of them weren't set up to take cash, and the ones that did took pictures of their suspicious customers. But at least the sidewalks wouldn't be deserted, not with revelers rolling from party to party. How many people, though, were sitting at home, terrified, waiting to die? On her way downhill, she passed two churches and a mosque, and they were all doing a brisk business. A block from Creekside, she stopped at a convenience store and bought an overpriced bottle of domestic champagne. It came out of a barrel of ice water. The clerk dried it off for her and put it in a bag. "I hope we have something to celebrate tomorrow," he said. "I hope we're here tomorrow." "I wouldn't worry about that," she said. "If they wanted to destroy us, they would have done it by now." He nodded and took her cash and clumsily counted out change. "Do I know you from somewhere, ma'am?" "No, just passing through." She crossed the bridge over Hogtown Creek and hurried into the apartment building. There were a lot of people sitting, partying, on the grassy banks of the creek, and she didn't want to be recognized. She tried four entrances before she found the one with P. Parker, 203. Whatever his real name was. She'd expected a spare bachelor flop, appropriate for a man with no history. But it was an eclectic, even baroque collection of furniture and decorations from all over the world. Japanese screen, coffee table from Bali or someplace, Mexican bullfight poster, a cuckoo clock from Germany or Switzerland, a pile of cushions in the front of the cube imported from exotic Taiwan. There was something odd about the collection, which suddenly struck her. Everything was the same age. As if he'd gone into Pier 3 and said, "I'll take this, this, and this." No champagne flutes in the kitchen, but she did find two wine glasses of Waterford crystal. So it wasn't all Pier 3. She popped the cork on the champagne and poured herself a glass and put the bottle in the refrigerator. It was empty and spotless. She checked the cupboards and there was no food, not a can of sardines or a box of cereal, just matching plastic salt and pepper shakers. Nothing sinister about that. A lot of bachelors ate in restaurants all the time and brought takeout home. She took the champagne back to the living room and turned on the cube. It didn't respond to the clicker, but the manual controls were clear enough. She put it on CNN and turned the sound down to a whisper. She set her glass on the Balinese table and curled up on the Taiwanese pillows and opened the musty old book. That was also a world-changing time, World War II. The stridently upbeat tone of the magazine probably meant people were as worried as the young man who sold her the champagne. But that was protracted. She checked the dates. 6 years. And the enemies were just people. Beatable. Not aliens who could destroy your planet on a whim. Or said they were. She put her book down, finished off the glass in a couple of gulps, and went to refill it. From the kitchen, she could hear a commotion going on outside. She filled the glass and took it out onto Pepe's balcony. A circle of young people was dancing in the creek, laughing and singing. About half were naked in spite of the cold water. Crowds on both banks were clapping and shouting, "Take it off! Take it off!" Well, they were expecting a message of peace and hope in a few hours. What would they actually get? She closed her eyes and suddenly opened them, just in time to keep from dropping the expensive crystal over the balcony. Her arms and legs were heavy with fatigue. She went into Pepe's room and manually set the clock to wake her up at 5:45. Not trusting the voiced controls. Exactly 3 hours of sleep. She was unconscious before it said 2:46. When the clock woke her, she staggered downstairs and got breakfast from machines, guaranteed bad coffee in a candy bar. They didn't have any Mars bars, unfortunately, so she picked one at random. Did they still make Mars bars? She hadn't bought a candy bar in 20-some years. The chocolate was unpleasantly rich and sweet, but it would get her through to the end of the world.